Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in. Winning cures everything. It is the Monday, May 16th edition of the show. I'm Gary.
I'm Chris.
And we have got quite a bit on the slate today. Chris, we'll start off with this. You were in the World Championship Barbecue Cooking Competition over the weekend. How did everything go? I hear good things.
Went well. This is the, I'll tell you this, personally, I am more pleased with the ribs that we turned in this competition than I have in any of the other competitions I've ever done in the history of my life. These are the best product that I've ever turned in. We came in 28th out of 104. I would have liked to have done better. My goal, which is a hell of a thing, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
My goal, my objective was I wanted to finish in the top 20%. I thought that would be, you know, something really, really special. This team that I cooked with, all but one guy, we've came in fourth before, and that was about 6 years ago. But it's a crapshoot. I mean, we've also come in 100-something. So, you know, it's one of those things where it just depends on how it turns out that day. These were perfect. I mean, they really genuinely were perfect. So
that's, I saw the pictures of them and I was excited. I was a little bit jealous that I did not get to enjoy them. You guys got evacuated on Friday for a little bit, right?
Oh, well, we did. Let me tell you something now. the old man and the libertarian is about to come out of me, okay? The state is not your friend, guys. Just hear me when I tell you the state is not your friend. It was like we were in Nazi Germany and they were the goddamn Gestapo wrangling people up because a thunderstorm was coming, and they put everybody in the Liberty Bowl, right? It's okay, big deal. So we walked over there. I don't want to cause any gruff. I don't want to cause any problems, but I did just get my damn ribs on the cooker. So, you know, we walk over there, and the Liberty Bowl's got like 20 different entrances, right? You can go into a bunch of different ways. Most everybody went into one way. We kind of walked towards another corner and realized, oh, this isn't an entrance, but we're underneath we're underneath everything.
Yeah.
And we're perfectly safe. We're perfectly fine, but we're not in there. After a little bit, you could see it was breaking up. You could see it wasn't nearly as bad as projected, which it always is, never as bad as projected. And right. So we saw a couple other teams walking over. I look at my timer and think, man, these ribs about ready to be tended to. I got to go. So I just walked over there and I said, if somebody says something to me, I'll walk back. I'm not going to fight the man, but I'm also not going to stay here if they've gotten everybody wrangled up and they don't care anymore.
Okay.
So then I got a buddy of mine texted me, said, hey man, I see you cooking. And I said, yeah. I said, come on back over. He said, we can't. I said, what are you talking about? They locked the gates. They ushered them all in to the damn Liberty Bowl and they closed the wrought iron gates and locked them, and police sat outside of them and made them wait for 2 hours.
Wow. Okay.
And that's... all I kept thinking was, is, man, if this ain't the big, hang on. This is for your safety, guys. This is for your safety. Remember that. Remember, that's what they're saying when they're trying to tell you something. Be careful. Be real careful. The state is not your friend.
Here's the deal with that. So Friday
was annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The deal with the it's if there is a lightning strike within 8 miles of the event, then you have to wait 30 minutes until after that is gone, which honestly makes no sense considering how fast some of these storms move through.
But, well, that was it. The cloud opened up in the sky. Like, you could see basically the storm came from the west, which they always do.
Yep.
And as soon as it hit the water, it was burrowing through Arkansas, which you can hit a golf ball real far, you hit Arkansas. Yes. As soon as it hits the Mississippi River, it just completely dissipates. It hits that water, and it falls all to pieces, and it spreads wide open. And we had blue, sunny skies. It was absolutely perfect. And for about an hour after blue skies, they were all still locked up. We can't use logic. We can't use common sense. We can't use your goddamn eyeballs. You got to listen to the state. Because old Smokey Joe sitting in his car right in front of the damn locked up gates, what are we doing? We're locking people in gates now?
It's nuts. Well, they did that for Bill Street Music Festival, too, like on the Saturday night of that.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
It's because of, they've got all the metal scaffolding and all that kind of stuff that's inside the park. But they also, Megan Thee Stallion, I don't think, went on until almost 1 o'clock in the morning. And she finished her set around 2 a.m. So, it's weird how they do it.
First thing they did is they used the same weird-ass COVID science of if you had a wristband to get in, then you could stay. The storm was safe enough for you to be there. But if you bought a ticket to get in, you had to leave the park because it wasn't safe. And so it's safe for me, but it's not safe for all the people that paid to get in. Okay, that's weird. That's like saying it's not safe to walk to your seat, but as soon as you sit down in a restaurant, COVID can't get you. Like we're using the same gypsy logic that don't make any sense when we're talking about doing these things. You're on an airplane, you got to wear your mask, but as soon as you get a drink and some crackers, you can take it down. COVID won't get you. Don't know you're eating. I'm not a COVID denier. I'm not anything. I'm just telling you, the state likes to make rules because it likes to tell people how to live their life and what to do. Nothing's ever for your safety. So that was the only quip in the thing. I'm glad. And I'll tell you this, from this point forward, I always try to find a corner to where I'm following their rules, but you're not locking me in a gate, man. You're just not locking me in a gate. 2 hours they stayed in there, and you know what? Every bathroom in the Liberty Bowl was locked up. So these people have been drinking since like 9 a.m., and now they're locked up for 2 hours. People just pissing everywhere, man. Ooh. Just the world is your urinal. Just go ahead and go.
That is insane. Absolutely insane. I bet a bunch of ribs got burned.
We got to our corner, the first thing I told everybody, I kind of jokingly said, we got to find a pee corner, guys. We got to figure this thing out. We got one dude that wheeled a keg over. What are we going to do? So at some point in time, somebody's going to take a piss.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that sounds ridiculous. Anyway. A lot of burnt ribs, a lot of burnt, pork and whatnot.
Burnt Friday. It was pretty perfect. It was pretty amazing. Had a good practice run Friday and a perfect Saturday for me cooking them. I can't control the judges, but that's okay. Had a really, really good time and looking forward to next year.
Well, that definitely works for me. Definitely works for me. I have had your ribs before. I know that they are fantastic. So yes, I am. I'm ready to try them again. Let's hop into some of this news, man. We got all kind of stuff that is going on. Patrick Beverley. Now we'll go on and talk about this. Patrick Beverley. My goodness, what is going on with this man? Called out CP3. I'll go on and pull it up on the screen here. Patrick Beverley says the Suns should have benched Chris Paul in blowout loss. He said that CP3 is a cone. He's like a safety cone out there. You can get around him whenever you want to. And Luka absolutely did. Luka Doncic, I mean, just ate him for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He talked about that. And he also talked about, I'll put this on the screen here, he called it before the game. He said, y'all stay locked in. Let's see who pulls the fake hurt move down a dub. And sure enough, and he called that at 8:49 p.m. And at 10:52 p.m., Mark Spears tweeted, Suns point guard Chris Paul limped out of the arena with a very slow walk. So-and-so learned that Paul had a left quad injury. When asked about his quad injury, Paul declined the comment. Like, Patrick Beverley has played with these guys. He knows this situation. He knows what guys do what and make it look like, oh, we've always wondered about this. Like, was Chris Paul really hurt? Like, is that why they got blown out so bad, or is it just he's faking this so that he looks heroic for even playing in the game, all that kind of stuff. There are a lot of dudes that do not like Chris Paul, and they do not like the Phoenix Suns, and there's a lot of people that don't like Patrick Beverley either. But him coming out with this stuff, there was another tweet. I thought I had it pulled up. I do not. Jeremy Lin tweeted something about, I hope that Chris Paul wins a title before he retires because he deserves it. And Patrick Beverley responded to it last night and said, why does he deserve a title? What has he done that makes him deserve a title more than anybody else? And that's a very interesting point. Chris, you and I have talked about this before a little bit. Maybe not on the show, but why do we feel like some of these players that have just been around for a long time and have kind of been superstars, why do people believe that they deserve titles? Do you have any idea what that's about?
It's just this new American way where we think that, you know, you're playing a team sport. But people say the same thing. Oh, Mike Trout. Oh, gosh. He's been the best player in baseball for so long. Like, he it'd be great to see him win one. Like, why? Why would it be great? Why would it be great? He takes a shitload of money. The rest of the team sucks dick most of the time. This year, they're amazing. Yeah. And you know, okay. Like, maybe if he didn't take all that money, they could have put a better team around him all these years. Like, I don't know. I can't explain it. But it's a team sport. All these things are team sports. And even if they're individual sports, like, who cares? The best guy wins. And if the – look, I'm a Ricky Fowler golf fan, okay? I would give anything in the world to have seen Ricky win a major. Now Ricky's not even competing in the majors anymore because he's just falling off compared to where everybody else is, all right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't deserve it. I just wanted to see him get it because I love it. But that has nothing to do with who deserves it and who doesn't. The team that wins usually deserves it.
Usually.
And there are some sports where rules are manipulated and you know, I don't like the way things are built. And I don't like the way – like, NBA is that sport, okay? I'd much rather see the Suns win than one of these, you know, the New York Nets. Like, these friends and family – you know, it's too hard to win, and so I'm just going to join up with three of the other best players in the world, and then we'll win that way. Like I hate that.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do. Like, what, you know? So if anybody deserves to win, you know, it's these guys that try to build it the right way. Chris Paul's been passed around the last couple of years to a lot of different teams. I don't like him. I don't like his style of play. I think – and I've caught shit from this from friends of mine that are big NBA fans. I think he's overrated in his style of play and his game. This is not the first major collapse that we have seen him have in playoffs. You know how I feel about this. As soon as, you know, the season's over with, oh, we're going to find out there was an injury bullshit. I just hate that. Guys do it in football all the time. And I'm sure they do it in baseball too. And it's just one of those things where I hate it. Why does the guy have to be hurt just because he sucks?
Yeah, he just got whipped.
The rule that I have is if you're going to play through an injury, because I said this shit with Baker Mayfield all last year, if you're going to be hurt and sit down. But if you're going to play, I get the right to judge your ability on the field. I get to judge you for how you played the game, okay? And you don't get the excuse of playing hurt and sucking and then saying, yeah, but I played hurt. No sir. Strap it up. You owe it to the other men in that locker room to make no excuses. If you're ready to go, then you're going to be judged on what we see, the performance you put on the court or you put on the field. We get to judge that, and you don't get this caveat of, oh, but I was hurt. But see, the problem is too many media guys have become friends with these players. And they don't want to say hateful things. They don't want to say hurtful things. They don't want to say that he shouldn't have played through the injury or call him out like Patrick did. I know Patrick is an unlikable guy. I know all of Memphis hates Patrick right now because of our game against series against the
Timberwolves. Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you this. I like his style of play. He is a Jay Crowder style guy. He is a Marcus Smart style guy.
Yes,
he is a bulldog on the court, and he takes no shit from nobody. And he's gonna fight tooth and nail. He wasn't born with all the God-gifted ability that some of these guys were, okay? He didn't have the body that LeBron James had at 14 years old. Look, the Lord didn't bless him that way, okay?
No, he had to work for everything he got.
That's right. That's why my favorite player in the NBA for so long was Tony Allen, because Tony Allen knew his role. Tony Allen said, I will D up anybody on the planet. You don't want me touching the basketball once I steal it, but by God, I'm going to steal the shit out of it over and over again.
Pat Bev has a lot of TA in him, a whole lot of Tony.
He does.
Allen. Yeah.
He does. I know Grizzly fans don't like him because you don't want to go against that guy. You know what? I want that guy on my roster. I want 100%. That guy on my team.
Oh, he'd be great. He'd be great for this team. He does talk a lot.
He'd be great for any team. He'd fit in well because we talk a lot of cold shit too. But I don't understand the he deserves a title thing. You know, Dan Marino has got to be the greatest quarterback in NFL history that didn't have a title. I mean, he really is. There's almost no difference in the numbers that he put up his entire career, consistent like with contemporaries, that was any different than John Elway and Peyton Manning. You're talking about the best on the planet. And because these guys start getting a couple of rings here and there, everybody starts leapfrogging him. And I can't explain it. I don't know. When he was playing the game, I was young and I loved it and I watched, but I didn't really know how to watch football back then. It's just really hard for me to judge, but I don't understand this concept that wouldn't have been better for his career if he won one. Yes. That's an insane statement to make. Yeah. Like, you shouldn't have to say that, but does he deserve one? Like, should we just treat him like he has one? I don't understand that either.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. It doesn't always make a lot of sense to me. You know,
How do you feel about Chris Paul personally? Because I've never liked his game. I don't like him on the court at all. I don't know anything about the man personally, but like I've never ever liked him at all. I think he always takes cheap shots.
That's my situation with him.
I'm not going to say dirty, but man, he borders real close to dirty. But then he whines and bitches when other people ticky-tack touch him. And you know me and the consistency thing, man. If you're going to play hard and aggressive and you're going to try to get away with stuff, you damn sure can't be a baby about it when other people do it to you.
A whiner. And when he was playing with the Clippers, it was very apparent, right? Like you knew exactly what he was. You were right. I mean, he has been.
Oh, they were Flop City.
Yeah, Flop City.
They went from Lob City to Flop City.
And so he played for the Clippers, then got traded to the Thunder, went to the Rockets. Now he's been with the Suns. And, like, everywhere he goes, they do get better. But,
yes.
You know, they never reach that pinnacle, which is, you know, what Patrick Beverley was talking about. You know, yeah, he's a good player, but I don't think he deserves
a title. I mean, there are people that right now. Mike Wilbon, who I appreciate, and I hear his arguments, and this guy is far more knowledgeable about the NBA than I'll ever be. He's forgotten more about the sport than I'll ever know, okay? He, this year, had him as, like, the ninth best player in the NBA. And that's insane.
That's absurd.
I know that they won, like, 60-something games, okay? I know they're the only team that won 60 games this year. I know they had an amazing season, but – There's no way on earth he had a top 10 in the entire league season. There's no metric that you can get that from.
No, there's not. He's 37 years old, by the way. So.
yeah. So he ain't getting a ring, all right? Because if he didn't do it this year, he ain't getting one. Because tomorrow he's going to be older than he was today. That's how time works, baby.
Yeah. Chris Paul blew his fifth 2-0 series lead of his career, which is an NBA record. I mean, we've seen him do this a lot. He's blown 3-1 leads before. He's, you know, all this kind of stuff.
You know what we're not doing and what we haven't done and we should? We haven't talked enough about Luka.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, see, I put my little cap on And I think back a couple of years ago when that draft came out and everybody said this guy's going to go first and this guy's going to go second, this guy's going to go third, and all these things were going to happen. And I said, why? Why? Why anybody taking Luka? No, well, they're all afraid to take the foreign guy because Darko Milicic was a bust. Like the last big-time foreign white guy, you know, that was taken number one overall was a bust. So we just can't ever do that again. So he'll go third or fourth, but yeah, he won't go first. And I said, why? He's the best player. Like, he's been playing professional basketball since he was, like, 13 years old. Like, I want that guy.
You remember the Mavericks were the number five pick that year, and they're the ones that traded with the Hawks. The Grizzlies were right in the middle.
Right in the middle. They so traded with the Hawks.
The Hawks took him. The Hawks took Luka and then traded him back to the number five pick for Trae Young. And right in the middle, Memphis took Jaren Johnson Jr.
That's right. We took Triple J.
And
I'm right with that.
And it's
kind of, hang on.
It's worked out for all of them.
All three of those guys. Can you tell me who the first two players were in that draft?
Man, I do not remember to save my life.
I'm driving.
Marvin Bagley the second, I think, was number two.
Congratulations. All right. Yep.
What draft was that? Was that 2018 or 19?
18. I think Ja was 19.
Da, 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 da. Let's see. This was DeAndre, the year before us. DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley.
Aiden's been Aiden's been special. And I still think Aiden's special. I'm going to say this is not a planet owned in the solar system that I would take DeAndre Ayton over Luke.
Hey, Chris, where are you driving right now?
Aluja.
Aluja?
Hey. God damn it.
Hold on, you're good. You're good now.
You got me back?
I got you back.
I hear you giggling.
It was doing the weird digital whatever stuff.
I'm on Pleasant Hill Road. I'm on Pleasant Hill, and I'm almost to Kroger. I'm not in the bush, damn it. So you got every other swear word that I said?
Yeah, I got all of them. I got the whole thing.
That'll fit right in context. Everything else I do.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Luka's awesome.
Luka's pretty damn amazing. And the collapse of the sun is taking that away.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. We'll get to see a lot of them, though. You know, we got a new series coming up, them against the Warriors. We'll get to see them against Steph and Clay and all that bunch. So I think it's going to be fun to watch. It'll be fun. Let's move into some football talk. We still have the Mountain West Mountain Division that we're going to talk about. But we're going to roll through some football news, just kind of quick hitters, right quick. We will start off with Treylon Burks. We had talked after the NFL draft about whether or not it was a good idea for the Titans. They are of the belief that they can trade away a player the caliber of A.J. Brown and just go draft another one and keep him on a rookie deal, right? Well, they bring in Treylon Burks, and Treylon Burks was unable to finish his first practice of Titans minicamp. It says the Arkansas wide receiver was unable to get through it. He was observed as having trouble breathing in the wide receiver's first drill. Paul Kowarski tweeted out, Treylon Burks didn't make it through the first wide receiver drill, was hunched over early, went into a new building with trainer, was using an inhaler, came back out, did a couple of reps, later went back in. John Glennon, who reported on it, said one of Treylon Burks' final reps during individual drills before he went inside looked like he was having trouble breathing. It says, according to Pro Football Talk, Burks' first trip inside the facility, he returned to work with wide receivers coach Rob Moore on releases and head fakes. He went back inside the facility and did not return to practice. Vrabel said, working with the trainer sometimes isn't enough to get a player ready for NFL practice. He said, I think it's hard to think they can recreate with a trainer how we do things, and we see that with guys that have come back and started with our offseason program and guys that have joined a few weeks in. It's just different. I know that they're working, and they think they're trying to get in shape, but that's just not the case. That's something we have to focus on, try and make sure we're getting some work in. But with all of them, we're trying to be as smart as we possibly can. So it doesn't sound like this was a medical issue or anything like that. it sounds like he just got wore out, like absolutely wore out. And I don't know if this gives us any kind of insight into what, you know, Burks is going to be, but the early returns are not exactly favorable. Would you agree with that? Oh, did we lose Chris? It appears we may have lost Chris. And that's okay. We'll get him back here in just a little bit. But Treylon Burks couldn't make it through the first Titans. You're falling back out again.
So all this, I'm here.
I got you. I got you now.
I got you.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Maybe not.
Gary.
Yeah. Hey, disconnect and reconnect to this thing.
Jesus Christ.
Whoo, boy. All right, I'm going to let him talk about Treylon Burks here in just a little bit. But we'll move on to the next topic here. And the next topic is Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown has announced or released on Twitter or whatever that he wants to retire as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And the situation here basically has to do with he is not getting a lot of looks from other teams after what happened with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And in that situation, we're going to pull this up on the screen here. It says he wants to retire as a Steeler. It says free agent receiver Antonio Brown has drawn no interest this year, especially in light of his refusal to have surgery on his ankle until he gets a commitment from his team, which is kind of mind-blowing. It said it appears that he's thinking about not playing again anywhere. He expressed out of the blue on Monday he wants to retire as a member of the Steelers, which I don't know why Pittsburgh would do that. It's strange. I will certainly say that. As you can see on the screen, he tweeted out, just want to retire a Steeler, and I don't get it. He said he wants to come back as there we go, getting Chris back in here. But it says he wants to retire as a Pittsburgh Steeler. And I don't know why Pittsburgh would ever allow this to happen. It makes no sense to me why they would let it go. Chris, you back with us?
I guess. I've been sitting in the bank parking lot in the middle of Olive Branch. I haven't moved.
It sounds perfect now. I don't know what was going on. I've moved on to Antonio Brown. He tweeted out, just want to retire a Steeler. He's not getting any looks from other teams because he is refusing to have surgery on his ankle until he gets a commitment from a team, which is kind of nuts. Like, why would you not just get this thing taken care of, right? Like, we know AB's crazy, but
he's not ever playing again. He's not ever playing again. He's never going to touch another roster.
After what happened in Tampa Bay, I don't buy it. Like, I don't think
on the NFL. I can't say that he won't get broke and go to one of these USFL or USFL or whatever the hell these leagues are. But
maybe the fan controlled league, right?
Roster again.
Yeah,
he's never touching the NFL roster the rest of his life. So.
If you're the Steelers, is there any way you would do this for any kind of publicity or anything like that? Like, it doesn't bring anything good to the organization, does it?
Nope, it's all bad publicity. It's not what you want, and there's zero chance they do this. There's zero chance they do this.
I agree with you. I don't see the upside at any point for this. So we'll move off of that. Let's hit college football right quick. We got two quick topics that I did want to bring up here. Shane Beamer, the head coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks, talked about, with a couple of people, I think College Sports on Sirius XM, but after their spring practice and whatnot, he has come out and said his one change for college football would be, I would love to see in either spring practice or the month of August where we could actually scrimmage another college football team. He said, we are the only sport at any level, high school, college, pro, any sport, that does not get any kind of preseason scrimmage or exhibition game against another team before you go play for real. And I think he's right. We've talked about this as far as how we would change up the spring games where you could bring in an FCS team or whatever. But even if you were to scrimmage against, say, another SEC team or whatever, I think it could be good for everybody, especially with all the new faces that some of these teams have. You're bringing in transfers. You're trying to get the chemistry right, et cetera. You have no idea what you are doing until you step foot on that field that first Saturday in September or whatever. Labor Day weekend typically is the first weekend of college football. You got no idea what your team is until you actually see live bullets. So why would we not do this? Like, you agree with me, right? This is and Shane Beamer. This is 100% a good idea.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about this. I wish this would replace the pay-for-wins on the schedule. Is you call up some FCS team, you throw them a check, you bring them in. Instead of a spring game that is completely useless, that you get zero information from whatsoever, let's bring in a scrimmage game. And let's pay somebody in the spring and let you bring them in, and you work on stuff, and they get to work on stuff, and you know, the big boy team sells the tickets and makes the money, and this is how we do this.
Yes. Yes. Like, I know that we've only got 15 practices in the spring. I understand that. But you could totally make this one of the practices. Like, I understand NCAA rules, and they'll probably – all of these things will be changing eventually as it goes. But this is 100% what we've been talking about, and I think it's the right idea. Like, get these guys more work against opponents. That's the biggest thing. Just that do it against somebody else so that you can at least see what you got, you know? It's crazy. Crazy. And then final topic here on college football. Let me swap this over. We have got another transfer. And I won't spend long on this, but we've talked about Missouri, and they have been in the transfer hunt for quite some time now. And Missouri now has brought in Jack Abraham, former Mississippi State quarterback, backup quarterback for Mike Leach's bunch. And Abraham, you know, it didn't win the starting job at Mississippi State. I thought he might, but obviously they got a good thing going with Will Rogers there. Jack Abraham was the starting quarterback at Southern Miss for a little while, transferred to Mississippi State. Now in his last year, he's going to go play for Missouri, and I think he's going to be the starter. They have been, you know, they were in the Jaden Daniels sweepstakes. They were in the JT, was it Jaden Daniels? Yeah, Jaden Daniels and the JT Daniels sweepstakes. They were trying to get another quarterback. Connor Basilak transferred out and went to Indiana. I think this will end up all right. Like, you got a good steady hand. He's a veteran. He's a fifth or sixth year senior. I don't even know how long he's been playing. He's been around forever. But it seems like a pretty good move to me for both sides here. Missouri needed a veteran guy that has some experience, and Jack Abraham needed somewhere where he could actually play. I think it's a smart move. How do you feel about this one?
I think Abraham has potential to actually get some starting time. Now, he's definitely going to be in the competition.
Oh, yeah.
Will Rogers was not losing his seat. Will Rogers statistically was probably the best quarterback last year. I mean, if you look at the amount of yards that he threw for and his completion percentage was just ridiculous. So the only thing that hurt him was touchdowns.
Now, you have certainly got that right. The two that are left on the schedule at Missouri – or not on the schedule, on the roster at Missouri, we have got quarterbacks Brady Cook and Tyler Macon. Both of them were freshmen last year. You know, Brady Cook, 79.3% completion percentage on 58 passes, had two touchdowns, no interceptions. He could be the guy, but there's a reason why Eli Drinkwitz wanted to get another quarterback and wanted somebody that that might have been an upperclassman. I think he expects Abraham to come in and compete, and maybe hopefully is not the right word, but hopefully win that starting job to give them a little bit of experience at that position. So the SEC is tough when you don't have a lot of talent, and he's upgrading the talent. Let me get that straight. But it can be really, really tough when you don't have somebody behind center that really knows what they're doing. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. Let me go on and knock out these reads right quick. And we will tell you, you can find everything that you need to know about us over at winningcureseverything.com. Make sure and subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube page. Leave a nice 5-star review for us, if you would so kindly, over on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Those certainly help us out with the algorithm, etc. Jump into the chat or the comment section on the YouTube page. And along with that, you can also find us on Twitter. If you ever want to give us a comment, tell us something you like about the show, bring up a topic that you want us to discuss, etc., you can do that on Twitter. I am at GaryWCE. Chris is at ChrisBGiannini. And the show is at Winning Cures. You can also watch the show there whenever we actually go live on it. Along with that, you can find me over at BetUSTV.com. Got a lot of interesting things coming up this week. We are recording a show about the French Open that starts next week. We've got one about the Preakness Stakes that will be this weekend. All kinds of stuff. They are doing a boxing one as well, and I'll be jumping in on that. So check it out, BetUSTV.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That moves us over to our college football previews for today. And we will start off, my friend. It is the Mountain West Mountain Division. And we actually really enjoyed this division last year. Before we start off, we're gonna roll with the Utah State Aggies because they won the division and the conference last year. You got any initial impressions of the conference overall?
Division overall. Okay, because last time I gave a conference overall impression, and we're talking only division. This division, there are some teams that I think are going in the right direction, and I like the coaches. And there are teams that I think are going in the wrong direction, and or just not doing anything that moves the needle. Whether they're going in a direction or not, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. There are the haves and the have-nots. Let's jump into it, and we will talk about each one as we go along. We'll start off here with the Utah State Aggies. And Utah State, of course, Blake Anderson's team, hell of a year last year in his first season.
Yep.
Went 11-3, went 6-2 in the conference, won the Mountain West. I mean, just destroyed San Diego State in the conference title game. Their post-game win expectancy. This is a new one I'm going to bring up on each of these teams that kind of gives you an idea of how deserving the teams were, et cetera, of those wins. 8.28 and 4.72. So the post-game win expectancy for them last year says that they really should have been about an 8-5 team. But they went 11-3, and they certainly improved towards the end of the year. The first, like, five games of the season, or seven games, I guess, they opened up 5-2, but they got three wins, like, just by the skin of their teeth. I mean, it was really, really close. Probably shouldn't have beaten Air Force. Probably shouldn't have beaten Colorado State. I mean, it was stuff at the end of the game that really came down to it, and the stats just didn't look right. They got a lot of lucky bounces last year. But they ended up really improving throughout the season, and you could see it. They destroyed San Diego State in that Mountain West title game, and then they beat Oregon State in the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl. So this was a good team last year. This is going to be a fun season to see exactly what Blake Anderson has there. We'll start off with the offense. Bonner completed 61.3% of his passes. The offense was number 25 in third down conversions. They were number one in the country in 30-plus yard plays. So they were, I'm not going to say boom or bust, but they certainly took a lot of chances, and they capitalized on them. They're returning five offensive linemen that have 500-plus snaps. The question here is, can those offensive linemen get any kind of a push to help the rushing success rate with returning starting running back Tyler? Calvin Tyler is the running back, by the way. They were number 124 in the country. Every other offensive statistic that you could find was really, really good. Their rushing success rate was number six from the bottom last year. So if they can get any kind of consistency there, It's certainly going to help them out when they play.
Hang on now.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
That's Blake Anderson's offense. Hey, it is boomer bust. He takes the top off the defense, and if you miss and if your defensive back doesn't make the right play, he is going to score. Okay?
True.
And when he does that, that means he scores fast and they're not running the damn football. Like, this is the way that they play offense. Like, if they ran the ball really well, this wouldn't be a Blake Anderson offense.
Okay, you do have a value.
So they're not going to get better at running the football because they don't do that.
Okay. Let's talk about the defense. If you, without looking at numbers last year, would you have considered their defense pretty good?
I would have said at the beginning of the year, no, and I think they got considerably better at the end of the year, but I don't know any metrics. I'm just gauging on liking Blake Anderson, watching this team more than most Mountain West teams.
They were not very good at passing success rate, but they were pretty good at rushing success rate. They were number 42 in the country in defensive PPA per drive. That's defensive predicted points added per drive, which is really good for a Mountain West
team. That's really good for a Mountain West team, yeah.
So they
especially a team the size of Utah State.
No, you got that right. They lost some studs, but they did bring in some really talented transfers that could end up making the unit even better in 2022. Defense was number 31 in havoc rate last year, number 10 in stuff rate. So that defensive line was serious. You got to wonder, can they continue that trajectory without their defensive end Henninger and the linebacker Rice? Their defensive end, Byron Vaughns, is the key here. Like, I think he's going to be insanely disruptive. He had a personal havoc rate of like 5%, which is kind of absurd. Like, he's unbelievable. So I would imagine this team could be really, really good. They do have a linebacker back, AJ, and I'm not even going to try and say his last name, but his numbers were great last year. So they got some good dudes coming in that I think are going to be awesome here. Big losses, though. Their top three wide receivers are gone. And, you know, you lose that the defensive end and the linebacker. They lose the safety, Shaq Bond. They lose their tight end, Carson Terrell. Keys to the season here, I've got, can the team go 4-0 in one-score games again? Now, the post-game win expectancy, they suggested three fewer wins, but obviously they played better at the end. I don't think you can do 4-0 in one-score games again. They'll need to reestablish those playmakers. Like I said, they lost their top three wide receivers. But they did bring in Cobbs, a wide receiver from Maryland, and Xavier Williams from Alabama. And those guys could pop. They are really, really talented guys. I've got this team sitting at like 8-4 this year. And I think it would be really good, to keep them around that.
That's exactly what I've got, 8-4.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. 8-4, like I had a feeling you would think highly of this team as well. But, you know, when you look at the schedule, they play at Boise. They play at Alabama. I've got them losing at BYU, and then I've got them losing at home to Air Force. I think they could probably beat Air Force. They just did it last year. So is 9 or 10 wins out of the question here? I don't think so. But, you know, when you got those three on the road, BYU, Boise, and Alabama, anything more than 9 wins might be a little much. And 8 wins seems, just about right. Just about right with what else is happening across the conference. You feel pretty strong about that one?
Yep. 8-4 is really, really, really good season. That is – basically assuming they have one conference loss.
Yes. Yes. Two.
Two, I'm sorry, yeah. I kind of always take Boise out of everything. Yeah.
So they'll
yeah. I know it sounds shitty because there's no reason this team can't compete with Boise.
Agreed. I'm 100% with you. I think that this team Utah State could certainly challenge for the division again. Like, I don't think that there's anything great. Like, they could win the conference again. They got the quarterback is back, and they got talented transfers in. So long as everything cooks together, like, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be able to do that. We will move on over to the Air Force Falcons, and let me write my time down here. The Air Force Falcons last year, just an incredible year, and they do this almost all the time under Troy Calhoun. It feels like they went 10-3. They were that 149-45 game away against Utah State from actually winning this division, and being 11-2. They did win their bowl game against Louisville. Returning production is actually pretty good here. You look at their roster strength. The roster strength is never good because they don't get the same recruits as everybody else, but they develop the hell out of kids. Just absolutely ridiculous. Big losses for this team. Defensive end, Jordan Jackson, he got drafted by the Saints. The linebacker, Meeks. The cornerback, Milton Bug, the third. But everybody on offense comes back. And this was an incredibly efficient offense last year, number 15 in PPA per drive. When you look at, you know, the offense is just incredibly proven, incredibly experienced. Quarterback Hazeek Daniels is back. The playmakers, running back Hughes, the wide receiver Davis. They have got six offensive linemen that had 350-plus snaps last year. And then their top six rushers are back this season, which is just absurd for a team that is awesome at running the football. On top of that, the defense, you know, you got to wonder what that defensive line is going to look like. The defensive coordinator left, John Rudzinski. He left for Virginia. He joined Tony Elliott's staff over there. So the inside linebackers coach, Brian Knorr, is going to take over here. But you look at this, like the defensive line is my biggest question. They've only got one guy that had more than 277 snaps last year, and only three players had 250. Like, they don't have a lot of experience on that defensive line, so that's going to be an issue. They lost over 1,400 snaps between the cornerback Bug and the safety Taylor. They were number 120 in defensive explosive play rate last year. You got to get your secondary to limit those explosive plays, which is, you would think with them running the football, it would limit that anyway, but the play rate is the difference there. Keys to the season here, keep Daniels and the playmakers healthy. A little more explosivity in the offense and then limiting explosive plays on the defense. I mean, the way their schedule sets up, like they could have an undefeated season here. Develop the defensive line. Hope that Nora can continue that same trajectory that the defense was on under Rudzinski. I've got them going 10-2 this year. I mean, they are their post-game win expectancy last year, by the way, was 10.21 and 1.79. So that's during the regular season. They were not expected to lose that Utah State game last year. So
that's right.
I look at this team like I've got them losing at San Diego State and I've got them losing to Boise. I could see them beating both of those. There's not a team on this schedule that scares me for Air Force. Like I really think they're a fantastic team. Yeah. So I've got them 10-2, but I think they could be better than that.
We're pretty far off here.
Okay.
We might not have another one where we're this far off. I've got them 6-6.
Ooh, okay.
I just think this conference is getting better. I think the Mountain West is getting bigger, they're getting stronger, and they're getting faster. And the more athleticism that comes into the conference, the more that hurts these military schools, because there's only so big you can get, and there's only so much strength you can have in the bodies that you have to have to be in the military.
That I do see where you're going with that.
I think we're going to see a pretty big drop off there. So I'm curious to see one of us is going to be right, because they're not going to have a losing season, right? Like they're gonna go bowling.
I mean, they're gonna make a bowl.
Are they closer to 10-2? Or are they closer to 6-6? And I'm anxious to see. And you know, I hate that. I don't want to do that, but I think Army is really good. You know.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And you know, I'm not giving them that game. And I think Boise's really good. And I'm not giving them that game. I'm just not. There's a lot of games where I'm just not going to give it to them anymore. I think they've got a lot more coin flips than they do beating the hell out of folks.
Their projected SP plus record is 8-4. So it is right in between where you
are. So right between where you and I are. Yeah.
You got
two games. I got them 2 games less. You got them 2 games more. Yeah.
I may be overestimating underestimating the loss of Rudzinski, the defensive coordinator. Yeah. That could be a big thing here. I might trust Calhoun.
Just not giving him enough credit because I look at the schedule but I like this conference. I think this conference is getting deeper. There was a day and a time where this conference was a one-trick pony for decades. Not a couple of years. For 20 years, they had one horse. And now they got 5 or 6 horses, and they change spots all the time.
No, you're definitely right.
State, Like, won this monkey a couple of years ago, and then struggled to get to 500. And it wasn't because they fell off, because all the other teams got better. Nobody on the planet thought Utah State was going to be anywhere close to as good as they were last year. Is it impossible for another Utah State to show up?
No,
for
I don't think so.
Another team to go from worst to first?
I will tell you this. I don't know that Wyoming, Colorado State, and New Mexico are going to do that. But
we don't think it's going to happen. But also, we know. I'm going to tell, like, you tell me more than anybody else. Colorado State is putting money in the resources.
Oh yeah,
they're trying to get better. At some point in time, it's probably going to click, and it might only click for a season. But I just feel like this conference is getting to a point where you can't just wash over wins. Now the next team, that's going to sound ridiculous because they're the big boy team, and I just washed over wins. So
let's go in and dive into them. The Boise State Broncos. And, of course, first year under Andy Avalos. They 7-5. Their postgame win expectancy had them at 6.57 and 5.43. So, 6-6, 7-5. They ended up 7-5. Their projected SP Plus record for this year is 9-3. You look at the numbers from last year, and they were incredibly efficient. Number 49 in PPA margin. Net points per drive, they were number 36. Like, they demolished some teams. Went 0-3 in one-score games. The offense has got to be more explosive with the quarterback, Hank Bachmeier. They lose their big play wide receiver, who was the only explosive threat they had. That was Khalil Shakir. They lose, defensive back Kaniho, the linebacker Riley Wimpy. They lose offensive linemen. Jack Sears transferred out. The running back, our backup running back, Andrew Van Buren, transferred out. Like, they still got dudes. They're number 7 in the country in defensive returning production. They're number 23 in overall returning production. Strongest roster in the Mountain West this year, for sure. Along with that, you've got just efficiency on offense being the name of the game. Explosiveness was not. They lose the most explosive guy. Like I said, can they fix that issue? Can they bring in somebody or develop somebody into being that playmaker? I don't know that for sure yet. The offensive line is going to be good. They return 4 players with more than 400 snaps, but their rushing success rate last year was number 91, which is something we're not used to. They've got George Halani coming back, the running back, but they just were not able to really run the ball consistently last year. That's something that they're going to have to fix. They got to fix that on offense to be able to win some of these games. Along with that, on the defensive side, studs all over the defense. They need to limit the explosive plays a little more. They were number 66 in defensive play rate, defensive explosive play rate allowed. It bit Boise in a big way. They were number 64 in the country in 20-plus yard plays given up. Rather than just being efficient, I'm curious if Boise can get into the backfield. They were number 90 in the country in tackles for loss last year, number 64 in sacks. So you gotta be a little more aggressive. Avalos usually is. I don't know why this team didn't exactly jump into that last year. Still incredibly efficient team. They were number 17 in turnover margin, number 22 in penalties per game. They were better than that 7-5 record, it felt like. At least the roster looked like it. The keys for the season for me, defense needs to get more pressure and force more tackles for loss. The offense needs to be more explosive, and they need to win more close games. I mean, going 0-3 in those one-score games last year, including the first game of the season when they were up 21-0 on UCF and ended up losing the game. I mean, just absurd. Nothing went right in Avalos' first year last year. And then, of course, the team got COVID. They couldn't even play in the bowl game. So I'm sure that he is looking to get a fresh start this go-round. I have got faith in this program overall. I don't know so much about Avalos, but because he is at that program, I feel good about them. I've got them going 10-2. Only losses on the schedule I've got are to Fresno State and BYU, but even those could be wins. So I like them at 10-2. I think there's a big difference between the haves and the have-nots in this division this year.
So I do too. And we're exactly the same here. I was curious where you might have them. I've got them 10-2 as well. I think we're going to see a big bounce back. for Avalos and this team.
I could certainly see it. You look at what they've got. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. They could go out and lose the first game of the season. They do play at Oregon State.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, their schedule. It's not like the. I mean, 7-5 is not out of the realm of possibility again, because you've got Oregon State, you've got San Diego State, Fresno at Air Force, BYU, and then Utah State to end the year. Like, there are a lot of landmines here, but this is the best roster in the Mountain West, and I expect Avalos to bounce back in his second full season and really be able to turn this thing up. So I've got him at 10-2, and you've got him at 10-2 as well. We got three more, so let's go ahead and run through them. I won't say quickly, but quickly. We'll go ahead and do that. Let's move on to the Wyoming Cowboys, and Craig Bohl went 7-6 last year. Now, I had high hopes for this bunch last year, and they just did not do what they were supposed to do at all. And on top of that, this year, look, returning production, they're number 129 in the country. There are 131 FBS teams this year. Now that we have added James Madison, there's going to be more next year, but 129 is, you know, next to last. I mean, it's just ridiculous. They lose pretty much everybody. Their roster strength is way, way, way down, even worse than usual for their recruiting standards. They lost a bunch of dudes. They just lost Solomon Bird in the transfer portal. They lost both of their quarterbacks, Sean Chambers and Levi Williams left. The running back, Valade, went to Arizona State. The wide receiver, Isaiah Nayor, he left to go to Texas. I mean, they lost a bunch of DBs. Just not great things here. They did bring in quarterback Andrew Peasley from Utah State, the backup guy, and he might be pretty good. So we'll see there. On offense, it's a whole new cast, but they're going to have to put up more points than they did last year because the defense is just not going to be as good. They lost too many guys. The offense was not great last year. So, you know, and you know that I love teams like this, especially Craig Bohl, what he does. He likes to run the football, et cetera. You know, they got Titus Swinn, the running back, back this year, and he was the backup last year, but his numbers were relatively close to Valade's. So secondary lost six of their top seven. They did get transfers from Ole Miss and Wisconsin. They're still not as likely to be as good as they were last year. The defensive line and linebacking core look pretty stacked, but you can only do so much to prop up the secondary, especially in this conference. Brother, like I've got this team 4-8, and I don't like that because I like what Craig Bohl does, but man, when you get hit with the transfer portal and all of those seniors that graduated, you're going to have to try and develop guys early. They play Illinois, Tulsa, Air Force at BYU in the first, like, four of the first five games. I don't think it's going to be good this year. So I'm at 4-8. What are you looking at?
4-8. Wow, we have one that we're, like, wildly apart, but almost all the rest of them, we have been as close as you could possibly be.
We've been the exact same on – several of these so far. Yeah. Whew.
I got them 4-8.
When I look at this, I think there's not a lot of hope here.
Last year you tried to snooker me in on them being good, and I just didn't see it. I kind of stayed where I was at.
Yeah. You were smarter than me on that. I really thought like they had everything in place last year, and you look at the roster, and it certainly looked like they did, but. Ooh, and the schedule was set up like brilliantly for them, and they just looked awful at certain points. It was
why
you ridiculous.
Can't look at the schedule, my friend.
So ridiculous, just so ridiculous. But either way, so we both have them around 4-8. Let's move on to our next team here, and that would be, my friend, a team with a brand new head football coach. That would be the Colorado State Rams. Now, Colorado State, Jay Norvell, leading this team now. He was Nevada's coach last year. Steve Adazio was the man on the way out, of course. This is going to be a completely different team than what we saw from the Rams last year. They do lose their quarterback, big cornerback, Rashad Ajayi. The tight end, Trey McBride, who ended up going, I think, in the second round of the NFL draft. They lose a defensive end, Patchen, defensive tackle, Manny Jones, cornerback, Cameron, a whole lot. But they bring in a ton, just an absolute ton. They brought in 11 offensive transfers, 7 defensive transfers, and 2 special teamers. Like, this might be a quicker turnaround than I was initially thinking. They went 3-9 last year. Their post-game win expectancy said they should have been 6-6. Like, they lost some games that they absolutely had no business losing last year, but it was a completely different philosophy, which is why bringing in transfers was important in this situation. They are number 108 in returning production, and I don't know that that necessarily matters in this situation. The offensive coordinator, Matt Mummy, everybody knows Hal Mummy. He and Mike Leach kind of put together this whole air raid thing that everybody's doing now, and Jay Norvell swears by it. He did it at Nevada. He's going to continue to do it. Under Addazio, Colorado State ran the ball 56.6% of the time, and 63% of their passes went to tight ends or running backs. Norvell's offense at Nevada, they threw the ball 63% of the time, and 66% of those went to wide receivers. This is a massive offensive philosophical difference here. The offensive line is almost entirely transfers. Brought in a bunch of guys, you know, from Nevada that followed over Jay Norvell. They should be able to pick up a new philosophy pretty quick, I would hope, I would think. As far as the defense goes, like, they've got some incredibly talented pieces on the defensive line and in the linebacker. The front seven, pretty good. Devin Phillips, Jackson. But keeping them healthy is vital because there is zero depth on this team as far as, like, talented dudes. The secondary is being rebuilt. They're going to have to find a way to limit explosive plays. They were number 107 in that metric last year. Man, when I look at that, like, 11 Nevada football players followed Norvell over to Colorado State. That's a relatively new thing. So, yep. You know, I'm curious what that's going to mean. I don't have any real idea what to expect from either side of the ball here, but you know, I'm interested in the defense being able to provide the same stability that they did last year that actually kept Colorado State in games because they were number 27 in the country in defensive PPA per drive. The offense was just the biggest issue for them last year. I've got this team at 5-7, Chris. Like, I think they're going to be a little bit better than they were last year. I just don't know that they are quite there yet. Like, first-year rebuilds are always really, really tough, even when you're bringing in transfers. But 5-7 would be an improvement over 3-9 from last year. So how do you feel about it?
5-7, God, man, we're cheating off one another. I've got 5-7 as well. I think this team has a chance to be fun, exciting. I don't know how good the offense will be, but they'll be more fun to watch than they have been.
That's where I'm at. Like, the offense, you know, if you liked throwing the ball to the tight end and running the ball directly in between the guard and the center, you know, yeah, that was Steve Addazio's thing. And the problem is they weren't very good at it. They were number 114 in rushing success rate last year. Like, it's just absurd thinking about it. But they, like, that team could have been really good or at least more competitive than they were. And towards the end of the season, I mean, that team had just quit, which is why Addazio got fired after his second season. Like, they were really competitive early and then just, I mean, got whipped at the end of the season. Just unbelievable. So, yeah, it was time for a change, and Jay Norvell knew that there was not enough support at Nevada, and at Colorado State, he is going to get it. You don't normally see, you know, teams in the same conference, especially G5 conferences, steal coaches from one another. But that's the level that they're at, right? Colorado State is just a level above Nevada as far as, you know, alumni support, booster support, etc. Like, Colorado State wants to be one of the big boys. So, right. There you go. All right, last one on the docket here. And there may not be a whole lot to talk about with this bunch, but the New Mexico Lobos are next on the clock here. Danny Gonzalez, the coach, they went 3-9 last year. They are now 5-14, or he is 5-14 in 2 seasons as head coach. You know, they got big losses on defense. They lost quarterback Terry Wilson, but they do bring in the quarterback Myles Kendrick. They were partially really bad on offense last year, which, by the way, number 130, dead last in offensive PPA per drive, number 130 in rushing success rate, number 130 in passing success rate. They were number 99 in offensive explosive play rate. So not dead last, but, you know, still not great. It was partially because they started four different quarterbacks throughout the season due to injuries and whatnot, including they had to start a graduate manager in the last game of the year. So, you know, not great here. The offensive line only returns two guys with more than 90 snaps played, but you and I have talked about this. Like, is that such a bad thing? If they were already that bad, is it awful to just bring in a whole new crop of them?
I don't think so.
Either.
I think this is what you got to do.
Yeah. I mean, this is they were so bad. Kansas transfer quarterback Myles Kendrick looks like he's going to be the starting quarterback. I don't know if that's an improvement. We'll see. It's got to be an improvement over starting four different guys, but still on defense, everybody was very excited about bringing in Rocky Long as the defensive coordinator a couple of years ago when he willingly left his post as the San Diego State head coach. But this just kind of goes to show you that there are some places, there are some schools, some programs that you could hire the best coach in the world and there is still a ceiling on what they can accomplish. The secondary is loaded with returning snaps and whatnot. Their pass defense was their best spot. They were number 42 in defensive passing success rate allowed. I mean, the defensive line, they got to improve the rushing success rate from number 79. Like, that's going to be their big thing. The biggest thing, their offense has got to do something. Like, Jesus, that team is so bad. The keys to the season here, hope Myles Kendrick immediately forms a connection with wide receiver Jordan Porter, the guy from Arizona State. He averaged 17.9 yards per catch on only 14 catches at Arizona State. So you hope there's some kind of connection there because those guys are both talented. If the defense can be more aggressive and improve from the number 123 havoc rate, that could provide a little bit of stability that the offense can use to kind of catch up. And on top of that, if there is a regression this year, I don't know that Gonzalez gets to a year four. I mean, it might help that Rocky Long is there, but like you gotta show some improvement, right? Like New Mexico may just keep him around for a long time, but even God, what was the guy before him? Bob Davies? Like, he at least had something going. Like, I've got him at 2-10. But I, you know, they could go 0-12, and it wouldn't shock me. They could go 3-9 again. It wouldn't shock me. Anywhere between 0 and 3 wins is about where I've got them. If they got 4 wins, I would be stunned. Stunned. How do you feel about it?
Well, we're finally a little different.
Okay.
I got them 1-11.
We're off by one ball game there.
this is a bad football team, man. This is a team that I think would benefit from dropping down to FCS. But here's the problem. Look, I watched a lot of FCS football, you know, during that weird ass COVID year where we got to see them in the spring. Man, almost every one of those damn teams are a lot better than this team. Not a little better, a lot better than this team.
You're not wrong.
Not a little, a lot.
It's so bad because I would love a team named the Lobos to be pretty good, right?
Listen, this team and UMass and UConn could put together an all-star team of the best players on their rosters, and they'd still suck.
It's so sad. It's so sad. Like, I look at this team and I'm like, you know, like the safety Jerick Reed like could be fun, like the right guard Isaac Gutierrez could be fun. Like I just don't see a lot of.
They're just not good.
Yeah, I'm gonna need.
They're
to
just
see
not
it.
Good. They're not good talent wise. I don't think they're good coaching wise. They're just not. This team only exists to take checks and to cash checks. That's what they do.
That's mind blowing.
They should fill their entire – they should go independent and fill the – all 12 games would just pay for wins. Just line them up.
It's so frustrating.
Come out of the season making $24 million. You'll make more than every Pac-12 team out there.
I get down with that.
They have a bigger athletic department than the Pac-12 football.
Yeah, yeah. I could get with that. I am looking at, it looks like I've got Boise State winning the division. So
I do too, but I would love to see our boy Mike Anderson have another one.
Right.
Blake Anderson, I'm sorry. No. Blake Anderson, have another one.
Yeah, I would like that as well.
But Boise is the better football team. Boise is the better program. I gotta see Utah State do it again. Now, I'll tell you this though, I think it's a 2-horse race.
You asked me
what I thought of the division.
Yeah.
I think it's a 2-horse race because I think it's it. I just don't believe in Air Force the way you do. And so I think it's going to be one of those two.
All right. I can get down with that. All right. Is there anything else that you want to talk about on today's show?
Nope. That's it, brother.
That's it. All right. We will discuss the Mountain West Conference on Thursday. Between now and then, though, we'll go ahead and tell you guys, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and hopefully, all of your tickets cash this week.
Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more. Find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.